You're listening to episode 324 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. On this podcast, we explore the very nature of our minds, how they work, and how they shape our life experience. We believe that life is finite and precious. We know that our minds provide a powerful lens through which we experience the world, and we choose to take responsibility for building psychological strength to craft a life experience that is worth living. I'm Dr. April, a social cognitive psychologist and a life design strategist, and I'm so glad you're here. Friends, today's topic is one that really hits home for me. You know, a lot of guests reach out and want to be on the podcast, and every once in a while I scream yes into the void because I'm so excited personally to learn from them. And that is the case with this week's guest. This week we are speaking with Dr. Michelle Deering, who is an expert in the psychology behind the mother-daughter relationship. Now, before I go any further and give, you know, Dr. Deering's background, I want to encourage anyone who is a parent to listen to this episode. Yes, there are a few points in this episode that are very specific to the mother-daughter relationship. We talk a bit about the way that our societal pressures and the unique situation of women inside that society impacts our relationships with our daughters. So yes, that part is unique to mothers and daughters. However, there are elements of emotional intelligence that are applicable to every single parenting situation. There are also elements of making sure that you are supported and are doing okay that are applicable to every single person in a parenting situation. So no matter what, especially if you are a parent, I would encourage you to hang out for this episode because it is so good. A little background on Dr. Deering. She believes that every mother and daughter should have a thriving, loving relationship, and her refreshing approach has made her a sought-after speaker, online educator, and consultant. Before running her consulting business, Dr. Deering served as a licensed psychologist and a board-certified sports psychologist at a Big Ten university, Fortune 500 corporate trainer, and a higher education professional. Nowadays, you'll find her speaking at conferences, training for her next Reebok Spartan sprint race, and practicing rudiments on her drum kit, all while coaching, serving clients, and recording her hit podcast, Mother-Daughter Connections. Dr. Deering is a graduate of Brown University. She's the founder and CEO of Curative Connections, a consulting company offering mother-daughter relationship, personal training, and motivational and keynote speaking. She's a best-selling author of the book, What Mothers Never Tell Their Daughters, and she is a licensed psychologist and board-certified sports psychologist. She's contributed to Parent Magazine. She's a contributing writer for Therapy Brands and has been featured on a ton of podcasts, a ton of radio shows. I mean, you name it. She is quite the sought-after expert. So if you are someone who is looking to deepen your connection and your relationship with your kids, this is definitely the episode for you. Dr. Deering, it is so good to have you here on this episode. I mean, selfishly, I'm excited, but I know this audience is really going to benefit too. So thank you so much.
I'm so stoked to be here. Thank you for having me.
You know, when occasionally when a guest reaches out and or their team reaches out or someone and they say, hey, I think I could make a great contribution to your show. I saw your background and I was like, yes, because your background is all in the relationships that mothers have with their daughters. Mm-hmm. And that obviously is something that I'm very cognizant of, given my own personal situation with two daughters. But I know this audience is, there's a lot of women in this audience. There's a lot of parents in this audience. And so the things that you'll be sharing will be so helpful for this audience.
Yeah, I am all about mom and daughters. Just a little bit about me in terms of the personal stuff. I've been married for 29 years to my BFF hubby, and we have twin daughters who are handling the, they don't hashtag adult. They're doing the adulting thing right now as juniors in college. So we're very happy about that. And I'm a mother-daughter relationship personal trainer, and licensed psychologist. So I'm really about helping moms by equipping them, educating them with tools and strategies so that they can actually create connections intentionally and then have meaningful communications with their daughters. So that's my heart because it's so important. I see daughters as the next generation, if they choose to be moms, raising the next generation. So that whole, we learn everything early on from our moms, as I'm sure folks know. So I'm all about that. So I'm ready to dive in.
I love it. You know, there are some unique factors that influence and impact women in our society. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about, you know, moms and daughters, you're talking about really two generations of women who have experienced these societal pressures, these messages, these biases, I mean, et cetera, et cetera. From a slightly different lens, right? Things shift generation to generation, but the commonality there is that we all still experience a set of pressures that are unique. Can you talk a little bit about that? And maybe that's why you focus on this mother-daughter relationship, but some of those unique challenges and pressures and factors that moms and daughters face.
Yeah, I think that we as women, as you said, the pressures that we experience have to do with, I call them attacks on our sense of self. Mm. And those come in various forms, but the outworkings of it leave us feeling not enough. I call it the three nuffs that we deal with, not feeling that we're good enough, that we're doing enough, or that we're being enough. And those messages, unintentionally, because I'm not about blaming and pointing fingers, but unintentionally, we pick that up from our moms in ways that are overt and subtle. And I think a lot of times we don't realize that we've picked that up until we've actually had our own daughters. And then things come out and we don't know why. And we're just, we just feel this, but she's got to, but we don't know why. And that's where the cycle comes in. We start overcompensating for those pressures that we're not meeting, those expectations that we're not meeting. And then that just cycles into the guilt that we feel. It's like, I'm not meeting the mark, or I'm doing less than, and the cycle just continues. And we unintentionally pass that down to our daughters from generation to generation. So the pressure, to answer your question, is these societal attacks on our sense of self.
I love the way that you put that, because talk about something psychologically that we protect more than anything else, our sense of self, our identity, mm-hmm. our ego, who we are in the world. Mm-hmm. And when you put it that way, anything from expectations about how we look, dress, act, are, anything from treatment that might be different for us in the workplace or at school for our kids, et cetera. We could go on and on, but it can be difficult when you're on the receiving end of that to understand your own feelings as to why this is so hurtful and damaging. But when you characterize it the way that you did, it is it's an attack on your sense of self. You really can understand why this stuff is hard to deal with, because we protect that more than anything else.
Right. And as I was alluding to earlier, the way we protect it is by overcompensating. It's like this knee-jerk reaction where we just try to give a little bit more, be a little bit more quiet. You know, that's the one that's insidious. The times where we actually silence ourselves and we don't understand why, and stuff just keeps moving by. and then things fester, and then we don't know why we've just blown up at our daughter because she didn't do it this way. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So that's where the insidious nature of it comes in. Yeah.
Right. And mm-hmm. I like something else about what you said, because sometimes when we have these conversations, right? So I, mm-hmm. as a mom of two daughters, mm-hmm. have to acknowledge the fact that there are some things that I am teaching my daughters that are probably not helpful for them. They probably aren't. But so yes. there's that reality.
Right, right.
Well, let's set that right here over to yes. the side. The other reality, though, is that my intention is good. And I like to say this right up front. You mentioned it, but I don't want mm-hmm. anyone to miss that. Because sometimes when we have these conversations, and there's a lot of different conversations that we have where people get super defensive, the intention is good. The outcome is still not what we wanted it to be, but your intention is good. So if we can just like allow ourselves to not be defensive, to let our guards down and learn and grow, we can get to that better place that we want to, knowing that, no, you did not come into this interaction saying, how can I mess up my daughter today?
Right,
how can
right.
I make her feel really horrible? No one feels that way
right,
yet. Right. Subtly, and sometimes less subtly, mm-hmm. we perpetuate it without mm-hmm. realizing it.
Yeah. And one of the things is I'm not about, as I said, not about pointing fingers or laying blame. It's about gaining an understanding. And anyone who hangs around me long enough will hear me say this ad nauseum. It is important for us as moms to learn how to pause, to consider our behavior. And that is just a muscle that we need to kind of incorporate. Because I was thinking about it today. It's like, what keeps us from pausing? And it's those things that drive us to overcompensate, to try to meet the expectation, to, you know, like how our bodies are built for homeostasis, like, you know, okay. But anything that sends it out of kilter, i.e. that feeling didn't feel so great, we want to bring it back.
Yeah.
It's just an automatic. And so just understanding that our body reacts that way. And if we can just attend to it more, because there's a physical connection with our emotions too. So, you know, it's like, you know, if our body is feeling tense, well, that tension's coming from someplace. It's a feeling we feel physically, but we as moms tend to ignore it. And we just push past it and go on doing, giving. So that's why I'm all about folks just learning how to pause. And that's the thing that I work with my clients on, is learning how to pause to consider their behavior and then develop that lens that's going to help them in their particular relationship with their daughter.
Oh man, I like you so much. I love that you went to the emotion and the physical manifestation mm-hmm. of it. I definitely want to get there. I want to talk a little bit about this pause though, because yes. what it sounds like you're alluding to, tell me if I'm right, and okay. let's dig in here. Okay. We experience this right negative emotion or this yuck feeling. We'll just
yes.
put a big umbrella over it.
I love that word. I love that
yuck feeling. We experience that. And it seems like our knee-jerk reaction is, look, let's get rid of that before we consider it or learn anything from it. Is what I'm hearing from you correct?
That is exactly correct. That is exactly what I'm saying.
And instead, we should pause and?
We should pause and reflect, because it's in the mm-hmm. reflection that we can actually make the kind of connection that we're really desiring on the inside to have with our daughters. But if we miss that pause, we won't be able to reflect on what's just gone on inside us that has worked its way out in our behavior and that has now impacted the one that we love, our daughter.
Here's why I love this so much. Okay, so every once in a while on this podcast, we'll hit on, there's like maybe 5 plus or minus 2-ish main things that I wish people understood on a like foundational level, like at their core, I wish they understood them and could apply them in a million different ways in their life. And we're hitting on one right now. Mm-hmm. And that is our negative emotions, especially the strong ones, mm-hmm. anger, disgust, intense sadness or grief, loss, all of those, envy, those types of emotions that fall under the yuck umbrella that we tend yes. to want to get rid of because we don't like them.
Right.
They are some of the best teachers, because you can't feel that way mm-hmm. over something that you are ambivalent about, over something you don't care about. And we've had a number of conversations in so many different areas on this podcast, mm-hmm. not just relationships, I mean, across the board, where it gets into, I think it was some of Steve Hayes' work in acceptance and commitment therapy, he talks about how these negative emotions, if you can like flip the sheet of paper over, you can mm-hmm. see what's important to you and yes. you can see what's at the core of them, but you don't get there without exactly what you're saying, the pause and the mm-hmm. contemplation and the reflection yes. on them. Yes. And here's yes. like yet another way, this foundational thing that I wish we could just understand comes right. into play in a relationship that's so important to us.
Yeah. And actually that's one of the, I don't know if you've seen the cover of my book, What Mothers Never Tell Their Daughters, but there's a mirror there. Mm. And that's the whole point of having that mirror there, is that my book takes folks during the second part of the book through a process of actually pausing to reflect. Mm. 'Cause I think that that's so important. And I know, you know, and it's not something, anything that I'm talking about, or it's not something that I do. I don't do it perfectly, but that's what I've been working on for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. In especially after having our daughters, is that process of reflecting even more so.
Yeah. You mentioned something else that was really important too, this notion of we feel our emotions in our body, yet so many times I'm gonna almost draw a line at our neck, right? Mm-hmm. We feel our emotions in our body, but that's not where our focus goes. It goes immediately to the to-do list, the task list, the how-to, the stuff that we go immediately, and this is coming from a cognitive psychologist. I yeah, like I know, cognition I know. You a did. Lot, but we go immediately cognitive. We don't mm-hmm. sink into our body and feel mm-hmm. that. And I mm-hmm. love that you brought that up, because that distinction, I see that for a lot of, I want women for sure, but people of high responsibility who have a lot to manage, mm-hmm. they go immediately to their head and how do I get it done? Not how am I feeling? What's important? What's there to learn here?
Right. You know, and in my development as a psychologist, I appreciated the cognitive behavioral take of mm-hmm. things, but I never understood the body connection until I started getting trained and working with women who had experienced trauma. Yeah. You know, I myself being an abuse survivor and things of that mm-hmm. nature, I call myself a thriver, where, you know, that once that got put into the equation, I just would see people get freed up.
Yeah.
Like so much. And what I wanted to do in my book is kind of take all of that psycho stuff and just make it more accessible, yes. where it's more conversational. And folks could just see that it isn't all that hard to do if you just commit to, okay, let me just entertain changing some, just one part of my wiring. Just one. It just takes yeah. one part to change, make a change.
Yeah. And that simplicity sometimes trips people up, right? Because these feelings, the problems and the way that they manifest in our mm-hmm. relationships, in this case of what we're talking about with our
right.
kids,
right?
But that can feel really big and really yes. heavy. And you yes. can look at some of the tools and techniques that, you know, we'll get into. Mm-hmm. You can look at some of that and think, there's no way this seems simple, or this seems so straightforward in the way that you mentioned, it mm-hmm. can't possibly help a problem that feels so titanic.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I love what I do. It's that's just amazing. To come alongside moms and help them with that. 'Cause and the other thing I believe is that a lot of times, and again, because we as moms are doing things and we're keeping the ball rolling, we can sometimes feel like we're in this by ourselves, but I firmly believe that no mom is an island. You need to surround yourself with community, you know, and community comes in all shapes and sizes and forms. And so however that community, you can start looking to that community to affirm you, know that you, you know, come alongside you. And if it's in the form of, say, the work that you do in your practice and the work that I do in my practice, so be it.
I love it.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of what's at the heart of this relationship and the importance of the relationship that we have with our daughters is that mm-hmm. we want to raise them in spite of all of the factors that we have talked about, right? All right. of the stuff that society puts out there. We right. want to raise these young women to go out into that society feeling confident, empowered, mm-hmm. ready, mm-hmm. you know, able to stand on their own two feet. Mm-hmm. And that really is at the core of you know, our, we talked about intentions, our intentions here. Yes. We have good ones. We want to raise these daughters. How do we do that? Can you just break it down? How do we do that?
I think that in what I found is that, and again, a lot of my heart is for the tween teenage years, those who are in that, but I believe the principles are the same regardless of what age your daughter is. But first and foremost, every daughter needs to be seen, heard, and understood. And I'm going to zero in on the being heard, because it's in the heard, what you're listening for is what she's feeling.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times we as women, and I'm talking about us adult women, we're not attending to our feelings so much. We're just going, going, going. But as a mom, that is like, if you can just somehow connect with your daughter on the feeling of and hear her and communicate to her that you do hear her, there are ways to do that. And it's as simple as, and this might sound, you might want to put down your phone. You might want to turn your body, not just your face, away from the computer. You might want to actually put the spoon down from the kitchen, you know, stove, and turn and face her. You might want to just smile when she enters the room. Things like that will actually tell her that you're creating that safe space for her to really tell you what she's feeling. I can't begin to tell you time and time again how there are moms, when I tell them this in my consultations with them, they'll try and they'll go, oh my God, she said more than in those 2 minutes than she said the whole week in terms of what she was feeling. Just that one change of connecting and hearing her. And then the other thing, okay, say it's difficult to do that in the beginning. If you can kind of have on your purview that you want to cultivate within her own voice.
Mm.
And I think a lot of times, and I'm putting myself in, because I was blumbering through this early on when our daughters were, especially when they entered their tween years, we're so desirous to want to connect that we'll say things like, oh, I remember when I, or, you know, when I was this, and oh, that was just like when I, that actually negates her own voice and her experience. Mm. It's unintentional on your part, but over and over again, what that does is it feeds into your daughter's wanting to, well, I have to be like mom. I'm not like mom. Will she accept me if I'm myself? And that gets murky from there. And it ends up putting landmines that you end up stepping on unintentionally, but you don't know how those landmines got there. And the thing that I've seen over 20 years of doing this is that that's one of the things that feeds into it. So really, to empower your daughter, you want to hear what she's feeling and communicate that, but you also want to somehow be about cultivating her own voice, really asking her what her thoughts are about something, how she sees something, what she experiencing in the situation.
That's an important piece right there, because it's the distinction, and this is going to be one of those, well, duh, but it's hard to remember in practice, you know, especially when we're speaking with somebody who is a little bit older than, say, what my daughters are, who are still very young. When you're talking to a tween, you know, girl, and or somebody even like high school aged girl, it can feel like you're talking to somebody who's much older. You're speaking with an adult. What you don't realize is if they're still, to your point, in the process of cultivating or finding their own voice, it's tough to feel confident in a dialogue situation where the other person might have had a different experience than you. You know, if I'm sitting with my girlfriend and, you know, we are in a situation and I was like, oh, that was really fun. And she's like, no, I hated that. I'm not going to feel personally attacked, and she won't either, because we're grown women and we've been through it and, you know, here we are. But right. When you're cultivating it, it's harder to navigate even those small, what seem like disagreements, because you just haven't had the experience to sink into completely who you are and know that your feelings and thoughts are valid.
Right. And actually, I think the key part to that, being able to do that and practice it, is all around boundaries. I think if a mom isn't able to boundary herself, know where she begins and ends, know, you know, what constitutes her own preferences, likes and dislikes, and recognize that, and it takes a leap to recognize, you know, that person that's called my daughter is actually not me. So she might have some different personal likes and dislikes that aren't mine, like mine. That boundary is so important, because I think a lot of times moms early on, they want and they desire, understandably so, to have that close relationship with their daughter so that they can be friends. But first and foremost, you're her mom. You birthed her. She didn't birth you. And that line is going to stay there. And if you respect that line, that boundaried line, the friendship will come later, which is what you ultimately want. And so, yeah, so that's really key. Those boundaries are just really key.
That feels like the way that you described it, something that came to mind, it feels like that would also be extremely helpful when we're in a situation where our child is struggling with something, struggling to learn something, struggling with how to behave or move forward towards something. We can feel such a knee-jerk reaction to jump in and help. But when we realize there was a moment when my daughter was younger, she was having a hard time just interpersonally in her class. And I remember this realization thinking, that's something she needs to learn. Yes, I can talk with her about it. I can, you know, put her in situations and help her think through her feelings and all of that. But ultimately, it's her behavior and the natural consequences that follow from it are hers to experience and allow to change her and shape her. And that is both amazing and awful.
Yeah, as you were saying that, I was sort of like, yes, and all those feelings come up when it happens, like, no, not mine, kind of thing. So totally. And that's the part where it comes to down to, back to the pause to consider your behavior. Okay. You have to feel that, as you were saying earlier, that negative thing. It's like, oh, yuck, you know, and I think a lot of that yuck in the, a lot of the stuff that's in that yuck has to do with fears that we haven't really dealt with ourselves.
Yeah.
And so it's important for us to kind of pause to consider all of that. But you don't have to do it alone. That's why there are communities of folks like you and me here to come alongside you to help.
I really like that. You know, we just briefly touched on the emotion around that. One of the things that I tell people, if they ever ask, what is it like to be a parent? I say the exact same thing every time. I'm like, well, you don't have any more clean emotions. From this point forward, you will be both elated and devastated at the same time, all at the same time for the same reason. It is the most emotionally complex situation. And I think that's a good pivot point to take us into something else that I know you've thought a lot about and done a lot of work around, is that's not an easy situation. The job of being a parent, a mom with a daughter, parents in general, the job is not an easy one. And the way that we support ourselves and take care of ourselves is important. So, you know, as we're thinking about raising the type of human beings that we want to raise, how do we go through that in a way that we aren't lost along the way, that we still get taken care of?
Yeah, I think not to coin the airline industry about having your oxygen mask on, but that oxygen mask, you need to figure out what gives you life. That's why it's almost like coming to terms with, okay, being selfless is not doing your daughter any good, not doing anyone good. Actually being selfless, selfish, okay, is the most selfless thing that you can do. Because once you have attended to what it is that lights you up, gives you life, rejuvenates you, peps you up. You have to tap into that in some way, shape, or form. And it doesn't have to be a whole big grandiose thing. You know, some people think, you know, oh, I have to be able to go off to a spa somewhere, or I have to be able to afford this. No, it could be something as simple as when you're standing in the mirror of your bathroom and you've just finished brushing your teeth, look yourself in the eyes and say something positive. Just one thing, whatever it is you like. Because I know we as women, we look in the mirror and we're like, oh, God, look at that. Oop, little fuck. But find one thing about yourself. And actually, I double dog dare anyone listening to actually pinpoint something about your character that you like, because that's the thing that's going to stand the test of time. It doesn't fade, doesn't need makeup, doesn't need whatever. It's your character, because that's the thing that you, is going to be connecting with your daughter. So if you can just attend to that, you know, and if you have a bestie, you know, say, can you remind me, you know, we're in this together. Just surround yourself with, but really just do that pause to build yourself up in terms of something that will give you life. That's the first thing I think is going to be important for parents to do. And again, you can only do that if you're going to pause to consider what you haven't been doing, which is attending to that part of yourself, which is not a selfish thing to do. It is a very selfless. Well, you know what I mean? I'm doing a play on words, but
Have you seen Scott Barry Kaufman, his work on healthy selfishness and pathological altruism?
No, I haven't actually.
So interesting. Okay. Google that. And people listening to this, Google that. Mm-hmm. Because it gets into exactly what you're saying, where there is a level of selfishness that is very healthy for us to have. And it means that we're not putting ourselves as more of a priority than anybody else. We're not taking anything from anybody else. We're just saying, I'm a priority too. I get to be in the picture too and taken care of. I'm not just here at service of other people. And that pathological altruism side, he's linked it to, I mean, resentment and the degradation of relationships and all of this stuff, like the stuff that we desperately don't want,
right?
The stuff that we're trying to avoid by being overly altruistic, it actually blows up in our face because we end up cultivating resentment. So it just echoes everything that you just said.
Yeah. And actually the, I think it also connects to this whole terms of the whole thing I was talking about with regards to boundaries. I would actually, I don't know a way to say this, but I don't think we as moms need to say, I'm a priority too. I think we need to be saying, I'm a priority, period.
Yeah.
And I think when we do that, i.e. boundary our, not just our physical space, but our time space, our energy space, when we boundary that, that is the most powerful, empowering thing that you could actually be giving your daughter. If you want to see your daughter empowered and have her walk out into the world confidently, if you can learn how to boundary your time and your energy and things of that nature, that will be the greatest gift you can give her. In addition to love, you know, we all need love, but that, with that said.
Yeah. And it goes back to what you were talking about right at the very beginning of our conversation about how our kids are learning the intentional lessons that we sit down and teach them. We intentionally try to convey knowledge, but they're also subtly watching us. Our minds are just looking for patterns. They're looking for the rules that we're supposed to follow. Like, how does, you know, sometimes I talk about on the podcast, this notion of our self-concept being not what are like, not the way that you would fill in the sentence. I am like, I am a mother. I am a whatever. I'm like, those are roles that you play.
Right.
But when you think about who, like, what does a person like me do? What do we do and what do we not do? What do people like me try for? What can and can't we do? What should and shouldn't we do? And kids look around for people who look like them in a right. lot of cases. Daughters mm-hmm. look to moms, mm-hmm. sons look to dads, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. We look to people who are in our same social circle, socioeconomic, mm-hmm. yada, yada. Mm-hmm. We look for mm-hmm. people who are like us and say, teach me the rules. And we watch their behavior, not intentionally. Mm-hmm. And we don't think about the ripple effect that our own behavior has. God, that's so good.
Yep. Yep. I'm just nodding my head. Folks can't see, but I'm nodding my head. There's science behind it. I mean, ducks do it. we learn, and especially when they're young, that's why I tell moms often, you know, what's happening with you and your daughter in this case, or your child between, you know, the toddler age to the tween age is, you know, what's happening there is going to be playing out during that time. And during the elementary school age, they're learning more by observation than they are by anything that's taught. But when they get into that tween teen age, that's when they are taking what things that they've learned, okay, and they're starting to get more analytical about it, because remember the front of their brain, that lovely prefrontal cortex, is still developing, and you want to have conversation around that. But if you haven't laid the groundwork, you know, early on, it gets a little bit trickier to navigate that. But I believe that there is hope for healthy relationships no matter where you are in that trajectory. It just takes one decisive moment on your part to say, this is where I'm going to just attempt to do something different.
Yeah. Oh, that makes so much sense. And it, you know, it just underscores the, what's the right word that I'm looking for? The way in which our relationships, the way in which our interactions with each other build on themselves. You know, we sometimes people, I do this. I will raise my hand. We get so worried about what might happen in one moment. I lost my temper in that moment. Mm-hmm. We don't realize that what ultimately impacts that child is all the moments, like the right. stacking of the moments
right.
on top of each other. And I think, you know, the way that you said it, it gave me some peace that this is a process. This is an ongoing series of interactions that build yes. on each other, not just one moment where I had a weak point and it was a terrible day.
Right. Because we all have them. We're human. And we as moms, the only perfect thing that we do is that we love our kids and our daughters imperfectly. That's it. So if we can just embrace that and recognize that in that process, there will come a point in time where maybe an apology might be necessary. And so that it's not things like that, where we quote unquote miss the mark according to whatever mark it is that's out there that we have ascribed to. But when we miss that, that's an actual opportunity to connect with your daughter or son in a different way and actually model for them how it is you repair relationships or repair moments and things of that nature. Because I don't know if folks can see my hand, but this whole notion of friction, oh, friction's a bad thing. Actually, we need friction scientifically. And if you can just kind of imagine with me, not if you're driving, but if you imagine with me, you take your two hands, you put them together, you rub them, okay, and you hear that friction. Well, if you get down on a really micro level here, there is, if you had smooth surfaces, nothing would stick.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have no connection right. with the, you know, the people around you. But there's got to be some separation and difference for there to actually have grooves in which to fit inside each other. So I'm a biology major, so I sometimes get under the microscope a little bit, where, you know, the whole notion of everything's got to be smooth all the time. No. You need some of that difference to actually have a connection. So see those moments where you quote unquote miss it, because we all miss it. I miss it. We all miss it. See that as an opportunity. Not a bad thing. It's an opportunity to connect differently and model for your daughter and or son how to repair relationships.
I'm going to get meta for a second here.
Sure.
Because what it feels like too is I love that, right? Like how to apologize, how to come back and say that what you did wasn't the way you wanted it to go and why, like why mm-hmm. you know that, mm-hmm. What you wanted to happen instead, or, you know, how you want to behave in the future. Mm-hmm. Something else that I think we've talked about a bit, but not in this way, that we can give our kids is the recognition of that pause you've been talking about, how they can do that for themselves. Mm-hmm. And it takes a little bit of an older kid. I mean, I could try it with my youngest child. She's 3. It would be a little rugged with her these days. She's a dump truck. But you know, I think about as like even my older child who's in kindergarten, that's mm-hmm. something that I could see her being able to do already and practice.
And, you know, actually I'd even contend, I think that you can do it with younger kids too. It's not going to look the same, but there are ways to actually break it down, you know, and actually when you, I won't say do it to your kid, because first you have to pause in order to then engage in some kind of pausing moment with your young, you know, infant, toddler, 3-year-old. There are ways to do that, but you first have to pause. So I think it's possible.
I know that
there are different ways to do it. You know, like I'm thinking about when our daughters were, again, I have twin daughters. Okay. And when they were young, you know, one was walking at the age of 7 months and the other one had, I know, she was like, I'm going. And the other one, her sister who came out first, you know, was sort of like, I just like lying and rolling around here. So, but the pauses during those moments, I had to find a way to, how can I now engage both of them or one of them? So that they would recognize, you know, I did say, no, don't touch the stereo over there. And you did. And I lost it. So now how do I pause? And I would just gather myself. And it's sort of like, you know, mommy just yelled. It could be as simple as that. Mommy just yelled, didn't mean to yell. But this is why, you know, they mm-hmm. understand more than we give them credit for. It's mm-hmm. just a matter of starting with ourselves, pause, learning. And it's like a muscle. And you said it earlier, you have to practice this stuff. It doesn't come automatic, because remember, what comes automatic for us as human beings is equilibrium. Now there's disequilibrium. We want it back to equilibrium. We want things back to peace, happiness, you know. Oh, this doesn't feel good. The yuck, we don't want the yuck. We want the unyuck, you know. So we have to just learn how to pause in that regard.
I love it. If there's one thing you could tell the, you know, especially the moms who are listening to this mm-hmm. right now, as they're contemplating everything that we've talked about, what's one message you want them to have?
Oh, my heart is really for you to know that you are enough and that your daughter is very fortunate to have you in particular as her mom. If you can just let that just marinate for whatever it's meeting inside of you, just please remember that regardless of what's going on, you are enough. And there's a reason for you being that your daughter's mom. Mm,
I love that. And it's a really important message for us to keep in mind, because we don't remember that very often. Mm-hmm. In the context of the work that you do, what does it mean to be psychologically strong?
Well, we've kind of alluded to there being a lot of stressors that we're under. And so for me, being psychologically strong is about being aware of, being able to access, and then be able to act on whatever those internal things that we have to meet the external demands. And this is the key part, in a way that keeps us connected to ourselves and those around us.
That's so good. That is so good. Dr. Deering, you are awesome. I feel like I just selfishly have grown and learned so much from our conversation. I just really appreciate you being here and sharing this with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really appreciate this conversation. Just for folks listening to this, there are a lot of connections that we can make to things that we've talked about on the podcast in the past, and just a couple of resources that I want to make sure that you know about. So I will be back in just a couple of moments with a few ways that you can take the content from this conversation deeper if you are interested in continuing to explore this topic and deepen your understanding of it. So we'll be right back. All right, friends. So as I spoke with Dr. Deering, there were a couple of resources that I wanted to make sure you know about because it really will help you deepen your understanding of the conversation that we just had. First of all is a very recent episode that we did. It's actually episode 321 with Doug Knoll. And, you know, in this episode, we were talking about basically de-escalation in our communication with other people, but there was an interesting connection here. And it's the connection point between, well, of emotional intelligence. So his point when in that conversation was that with our kids, we had this offshoot of the conversation about how we can do this with our kids. And with our kids, he talked about the importance of recognizing their emotions, of allowing them to feel their emotions and helping them label them. And that really got me thinking about this conversation with Dr. Deering, because she's really saying the same thing. How do we help our kids feel seen? How do we hold space for the emotions that might feel really big for them and help them understand and label them? So that came up in this conversation, and I had to make a connection point back because it is such a foundational principle for us to keep in mind, this notion that we can help other people understand and label their emotions, and that is such a gift. The second thing that I want to call out, and the other resource today, we had this great conversation with Dr. Deering about healthy selfishness and pathological altruism. So this is the notion that we all think we're supposed to treat others and make sure that their needs are being met, and we do that at the detriment of ourselves. We don't take care of ourselves. There is actually a quiz that we have for free on our website where you can go in and run through a set of questions. This is a published quiz. This is a validated scale that's out there in the literature. We came and brought it to you for free, where you can go through and see how you score on a healthy selfishness and pathological altruism quiz. So if you go to peakmindpsychology.com/quiz, you can access that right now. You'll get your scores immediately, and you'll get a lot of helpful information about these two concepts and what you can start doing to take care of yourself a bit more. You are such an asset to your family, and it's important that, in Dr. Deering's example, you put your oxygen mask on first. But sometimes that's hard to do because of this notion of pathological altruism. So go to peakmindpsychology.com/quiz. It's absolutely free. You can take the quiz, get your scores right away, and learn a little bit more about healthy selfishness and pathological altruism and how you can take better care of yourself. And the last resource that I will highlight is one that is actually from Dr. Deering herself. She has a free PDF of The Quick Guide to Lessen Arguments. I've dropped a link in this episode description so that you can go get that free guide, download it from her website, absolutely free. So go to the link in this episode description and you can get access to that. If you want to learn more about Dr. Deering, you can go to curativeconnections.com. That is also linked in this episode description to make it super easy for you. So head over there, learn more about Dr. Deering's background and all of her amazing content. Dr. Deering, I want to thank you so much for such an incredible conversation. And I also want to thank each and every one of you who listened to this episode, shared it with others, left us a rating or a review on iTunes. All of those things truly help get this podcast out to other people who can use the content and the information.
And finally, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet. And I am so grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I will see you next week.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.